the way of life. Arthur Findlay, chapter to the medium. I have written and spoken much about Mr. John Campbell Sloane in some of my books and on public platforms, but then I was able to write and speak of him as one of us on earth. Unfortunately for us, but fortunately for him, he passed on in May 1951 at the age of 82. Since his passing, he has come back several times to say how happy he is in his new home, and that he has met many of the Aetherian men, women, and children who came to his seances to talk to us on earth. A short biography of this famous medium will be found in my book Where Two Worlds Meet, and in On the Edge of the Etheric I tell of how I came to the conclusion, after sitting with him on 39 occasions, that the phenomena which took place in his presence was supernormal. In both these books I explained how he was the passive reservoir, drawn on by the people on the other side who required a substance from his body which enabled them to materialize their vocal organs and speak to us on earth. When I had my first séance with him in 1918, I knew nothing of spiritualism, and naturally thought that the different voices I heard speaking were either his own or the voice or voices of one or more accomplices. That was natural, because I had never heard of ectoplasm, which is the name given to the substance they draw from his and the sitter's bodies. I knew nothing of our etheric body, which is a duplicate of our physical body. This body, I learned, passes out of our physical body at death, along with our mind and memory, so that we are the same person after death as we were before it, except for the loss of our material body. This, and much more, I gradually learned at his seances, so much so that I discovered a new invisible, but very real, world about us to which we passed at death. Then I was told that the people who live there once lived on earth, and could materialize with this ectoplasm their duplicate etheric vocal organs and speak to us on earth. So I now had a natural basis to enable me to understand how speech was possible, and how voices could be produced without our physical vocal organs, but that did not satisfy my inquiring mind. I must be certain before I could believe this, and that it was not the medium or someone else on earth who was telling me. So I decided to have sittings alone with Sloane, and I took with me my own stenographer to record everything said. I made sure that the voices did not come from her, as she sat in another part of the room where she could hear everything, but if she spoke, I would know. Elsewhere in this book I tell of how I satisfied myself that when the voices spoke it was not the medium who was speaking, but besides that there was the evidence given by those who spoke. My relations and friends came back and spoke to me, recalling events that only they and I knew. Much was said that it was impossible for Sloane to have found out, even if he had had the time to do so, which he had not. He went out to work early in the morning and he worked on his allotment plot in the evening. He read little because of his poor eyesight, and his intelligence and general knowledge were that of an average artisan. Gradually I realized all this, and besides that I found he was a man of high character, a man to be trusted and respected. His only fault was his grumbling and grousing, but this was more amusing than irritating. Tact and patience were acquired, and they generally succeeded. He was quite indifferent to money, and no one was ever asked to pay for being present at one of his séances. He gave these because he had a high sense of duty, and his pleasure came from the comfort and satisfaction his visitors obtained from the evidence they received that their friends, once looked on as dead, still lived and came back and spoke to them. For over 40 years Sloane exercised his mediumistic gifts without payment, and more will be said of them as we proceed. Even when an old man, at the age of 76, his mediumship maintained its brilliance, when his memory was so poor that sometimes he found it difficult to look after himself. At times he had to be accompanied by someone when he went out for a walk or to the various houses where the séances were held, and once, when he went out alone, he was lost and could not remember the way home. In his younger days the séances were mostly, but not always, held in a room of his own house. But after his wife's death he was invited to the houses of the regular sitters, and still the same phenomena took place. He brought nothing with him, and on arrival he would walk into the room where the séance was to be held and sit down and talk to the people present. Then the light was put out. So no preparations were made beforehand, except that in summer the window was previously darkened by the hostess to keep out the daylight. Until well on in middle age he always went into trance during a direct voice séance, but in his later life he was normal throughout the entire sitting, hearing the voices and carrying on conversations with those who spoke to him. After his wife's death in 1940 he received much comfort and satisfaction from the talks he had with her, and this was possible because the operators of the séance on the other side found that they could produce the voices equally well when he was normal as when he was in trance. So the following remarks, which were made about him, were spoken when he could hear and reply to what was said, but they only refer to what was said about his mediumship, and omit the conversations he had with his wife, and other friends on the other side, which will be found in their right place. The mass of correct evidence which was contained in the conversations between the sitters and the Aetherians is not given in this book, which is confined only to what was said of an educational nature. The evidence of identity of the speakers can be obtained in some of my other books, but this one is for the purpose of recording those things which we all ought to know. Once the identity of the speaker was established, as it was in most cases, what he or she said concerning the other world, and their way of life, is of value and well worth preserving. Mediums of Sloane's brilliance are rare, and it is unfortunate that much more that was said at his séances has not been recorded. There was enough to have filled very many books the size of this one. What follows in this chapter concerns only the remarks some Aetherians made about Sloane's mediumship, and the first to be given came about when there was a conversation between an Aetherian and a gentleman sitter. This is what the Aetherian had to say about the medium: "Any time I come to you in these surroundings I am dependent on the human element, the friend whom you call John Sloane. Without him, or one equally gifted, we could not make you hear us. But although you do not hear us unless he is present, we do come back and watch over you from time to time. He is just the vehicle for the transmission of sound. I could not speak to you if I could not draw from you collectively." One night the sitters were discussing mediumship amongst themselves, during a lull in the conversation with our friends on the other side, when the strong manly voice of an Aetherian gave his name, and spoke to his wife who was present as one of the sitters. This is what he said, and it was only too true: "Yes, John Sloane opened the door, my dear old friend Sloane, to Eleanor and me. We were treading a lonely way, Eleanor, you know the time when you were up against a stone wall, so to speak, and the dear old friends, Mr. and Mrs. Sloane, came down and we heard Bobby speak. I will never forget that night. God bless you." Bobby is their son, and his father returned at a later sitting. "God bless you, Daddy Sloane. My God, you opened the way of life to me completely. If it had not been for you, I would never have known this truth. I will never forget the night when Bobby first spoke to us. Then he turned to his wife and said, 'Do you remember, Eleanor?' 'Yes, dear, I remember,' replied his wife, 'but you have him beside you now,' to which remark her husband replied, 'Yes, I am beside him now, but it was my dear old friend here who changed my outlook on life, and made God real to me.'" The mother in Aetheria of a lady present, who knew Sloane when she lived on earth, was always grateful for the opportunity she got at these seances to speak to her daughter. Once, after giving her name, she spoke to the medium and said, "God bless you, John Sloane. It is to you that I owe so much. I have done nothing for you, but you are a dear old soul," replied Sloane, to which she answered, "And many will say you are a dear old soul also. I wonder sometimes if you can catch the intonations of my voice." Another lady in Aetheria, who gave her name, the mother of one of the sitters, who had sat with Sloane in her earth life, once had a talk with him. "My, I am glad to hear you speak," Sloane said, to which she replied, "I think you are a wonderful man, John Sloane. You brought some beautiful thoughts and aspirations to us when we did not understand properly, but it did us some good when we came to this side of life." An old friend of the medium, a man who had passed on, once returned. He gave his name, and the two had an amusing talk about old times. Then the Aetherian, speaking to everyone, remarked, "It is a constant source of wonder to me to understand why I can speak to you here so that you can hear me. I think I must be speaking very clearly tonight, because I sometimes come into your surroundings, not only here but in your home, and talk to you in the same manner as I am speaking at present, but you do not appear to hear me. I must give the credit for you being able to hear me now to our old friend here, John Sloane. Sloane always belittled his mediumship. He was one of the humblest of men, and never took any credit to himself for the marvels which happened at his seances. On one occasion something he said brought this remark from an Aetherian: "He is the instrument through whom we are able to prove that we do not cease to exist although we are out of the physical." At another seance, when Sloane said that his power was going, and that he was now too old to be of any use, a voice from the other side called out: "You have reached a degree of perfection, my friend, that you have never realized you possessed." At one seance, the husband in Aetheria of a lady present first gave his name and then had a long talk with his wife. He spoke for several minutes and concluded with these words: "That friend of yours, and of mine, John Sloane, through whose gift I am enabled to speak to you, I send him my grateful thanks. My voice may sound different to you, but I know, when I see your face lit up with that recognizing smile, you know who I am. Good night, my dear." The fiancé in Aetheria of one of the sitters once addressed the medium in these words: "There have been many letters which you have written, my friend Sloane, and many letters have been written to you, tributes which will live long beyond your passing from the earth side of life." "Yes, I know, Mr. John C. Sloane, and now that I am over here I know what a difference it would have been to me had I just been a little less skeptical in earth life. You see, I did not believe in anything of that kind at all." John Hardman speaking. "I had to alter all my views when I came here. It is a hopeless life to live on earth with no hope, no prospect of any life beyond. Still, I struggled through, but what I missed in that struggle. Yes, I have got into the light which never fades." Sloane's son was a frequent speaker. Once his father spoke to him about his unexpected death, and said how little he thought that when he said goodbye to him at the docks it was for the last time. His son replied, "It is just as well we do not know these things, Dad, but just wait until the time comes when you come over beside us. We will go over all the glorious scenes of the past, and walk in the new country and the new land which God has prepared for all His children. I am Dougal Sloane. If you walk according to God's laws you will have a wonderful life in the land of light. God bless you." "Thank you, Dad, for you were a good dad to me. I know you miss Mother, but she is here, and it will be all right. We will all meet again by and by. Just you go on and do the best you can. You have got strength in you yet for a while." Once, when speaking to the medium during a lull in the conversation with our friends on the other side, a gentleman present remarked that all the comfort and satisfaction that Sloane had brought to thousands would be a joy to him in the years to come. An Aetherian agreed that this would be so. In these words: "It will be a beautiful memory he will have when he comes to the other side, to know that he has brought hope and joy into the hearts of many." As I have already said, Sloane always disparaged his mediumship. At one of his last sittings, during a silence, when he was 76 years of age, his rheumatism bad, his eyesight poor, and his memory failing, but when his mediumship was as good as it had ever been, he made his customary remark which everyone knew so well: "I am nae use at all." At once an Aetherian rebuked him in these words: "You take a somber view of things. We know all about you, friend Sloane. I do not think you have a right to say that. You should allow your friends to say whether you are any good or not. I am quite sure you are very, very helpful in many ways yet. You have the power to bring comfort to those whom you come amongst." With the above remark I shall close this chapter, which I trust gives the reader an idea of the man whose ectoplasm enabled our Aetherian friends to vibrate our atmosphere, and tell us of the wonders in store for us all. Many men, who have been the leaders of the people for their good or ill, have been accounted great by their contemporaries and by historians. Sloane, from a worldly point of view, was not a great man, and, had I not recorded elsewhere some of the happenings at his seances, he would have been known only to the comparative few who had been enlightened by attending them. Nevertheless, though his death was ignored by the national press of this country, and only those who knew him mourned his passing, he was a really great man. He helped thousands to find comfort and satisfaction, by the knowledge they obtained through his mediumship that their friends still live and are happily awaiting the reunion someday. Likewise they learned that, if we live aright, we shall share the joys and happiness our departed friends are experiencing, in a world where beauty and happiness exist unrealized by anyone still on earth. Like all great men, he had a gift which raised him above the rest of the human race. Because he was unlearned, simple, and lived a retiring life, his work for humanity was ignored, but someday, when the curse of ignorance passes, and the great value of mediumship to the people is recognized, John Sloane will be hailed as one who did more to comfort and satisfy their inmost longings than most of the so-called great of the past or present. His work goes on through the records which have been preserved of some of his seances. These will be a satisfaction to very many in the years to come. Chapter 3. The stenographer's seances have been held since early times. As already mentioned, we have a story of the seance held by Gilgamesh, king of Sumer, some 4,000 years ago. Seances were held in ancient Egypt, in ancient Greece, and by the Hebrews and Romans. A general description has come down to us of what occurred, but nothing reliable of what was said by the people of the other world. We have the story of the materialization of Samuel in the presence of King Saul, the story of the seance held on the day of Pentecost, and the record of Tertullian in 211 AD about the seances held in his church, but that is all. We have nothing reliable about what Samuel said to Saul, or what the entranced disciples said at Pentecost, or what Tertullian's medium said when entranced during the services in his early apostolic church. We are told that the early church father Jerome was annoyed by criticism made at a seance, by Etherians, about his translation into Latin of the scriptures, but never do the exact words said by them come down to us, and the reason is obvious. Few knew then how to record speech in brief handwriting quickly enough in those days. In fact, the art of shorthand, or stenography, was generally unknown until the 19th century. The Greeks and Romans had systems known to a few, but these did not survive. Not until the Reformation was the art revived, probably for the purpose of recording sermons, but the different systems in use were clumsy, inefficient and laborious. It was in the year 1837 that Isaac Pitman produced a system which was simple enough to be easily written and read. Since this invention of modern shorthand, the entire position has changed, so much so that speech can now be easily reported as quickly as the words are spoken. Consequently, of late years stenographers have been employed to an ever greater degree to record what was said by mediums in trance, or when giving clairaudient messages, but the darkness necessary for the direct voice has prevented many records being made, as taking down shorthand in the dark requires some practice. So far as this book is concerned, I am indebted to two ladies, Miss Miller and Miss Deary, both accurate and expert in the art of stenography, for overcoming the difficulty caused by the darkness, and for all that is herein reported as being said by those who spoke from the other side. That their records are strictly accurate there is not a doubt, because they were carefully checked within a day or two of each seance by those who were present at the seances recorded. The regular sitters always received a copy of the records after each sitting, and no one ever found anything inaccurate or questionable. In every case they were passed as correct. What is reported as being said was said, and the high characters of these two ladies, who took down the shorthand notes, is a further guarantee of their accuracy. Some of the speakers on the other side expressed their admiration from time to time of the way the stenographers did their self-imposed task, their work, moreover, being given without charge. This is what one Etherian once said: "You are a wonderful little lady, Miss Deary. Your service to others in recording our words will be amply rewarded." Another Etherian once said: "It is a high honor that we can claim you as our helper, to portray our thoughts," and on another occasion this was said: "Whatever words you write will live after you, my dear." A longer and encouraging statement was once made to Miss Deary: "I appreciate your thoughts and your work, and your sacrifice for others in writing all these things down. You don't just know what a blessing they will bring to somebody needing enlightenment and sympathy." There is never a message you receive from the spirit side of life that is not important. If it comes from the spirit side of life, it comes for a purpose, and for an object in view, and it never returns home again without having fulfilled that mission. I shall give just one more remark, made by someone from across the borderline. Oh, I wish I could just bring all the loving thoughts that those about you now seem to have for you. May the strength of the great ones give you power in your hand for a long time, my dear, to portray those beautiful thoughts from the other side of life which we have not the power to portray if it e'er not through the instrumentality of your beautiful thoughts and writing. It is evident that the work done by Mysterian Miss Miller was appreciated by those Aetherians who spoke to us at the seances reported in this book. The thanks of all who attended these meetings go out to them both, and I have little doubt that the many thousands who read their records will feel for them equal gratitude, for the great work they did for humanity in preserving for all time everything that was said at these remarkable seances. Chapter 4. The Etheric Body. The first lesson in spiritualism is that we have an etheric body, a duplicate of our physical body. The etheric body interpenetrates the physical body during earth life, and leaves the physical body at death. Our mind does not die, and it controls the etheric body through the etheric brain. What is called our subconscious mind shaped our body on earth, and will shape and direct our etheric body in etheria. It constructed our earth body out of gross matter, and it has even greater power over the finer matter of the other world. The individual mind is the greatest factor in the universe. Without mind, the universe would cease to be. Life and consciousness would end, and without these there would be nothing. To be able to live after death without a body, such as we now have, is difficult to imagine, and, on the first favorable opportunity, I asked what kind of a body each of us has after death. To my question, the answer was given in a loud, clear voice by an Aetherian whom all the circle had come to know and trust. I have a body which is a duplicate of what I had on earth, the same hands, legs and feet, and they move the same as yours do. This etheric body I had on earth interpenetrated the physical body. The etheric is the real body and an exact duplicate of our earth body. At death we just emerge from our flesh covering and continue our life in the etheric world, functioning by means of the etheric body just as we functioned on earth in the physical body. This etheric body is just as substantial to us now, as the physical body was to us when we lived on earth. We have the same sensations. When we touch an object we can feel it, when we look at something we can see it. Though our bodies are not material, as you understand the word, yet they have form and feature and expression. We move from place to place as you do, but much more quickly than you can. Now that physical science has revealed to us that matter is an open network of vibrations, and that different frequencies, rate of recurrence of vibrations, can occupy the same space, it is possible to appreciate how two bodies can appear to us as one. The vibrations of one appeal to our sight and other senses, to be known as the physical body. The one which is not sensed on earth, and is invisible to us, we call the etheric body, which we will appreciate when it leaves the physical body under the control of our mind, the super etheric picture maker which is our real selves. So we once were told by one who has made the change called death, the spirit body, etheric body, has the same formation as the material body, and there is no one that has not a perfect spirit body. I have never seen anyone ailing or suffering in any way. This was confirmed and enlarged upon on another occasion by one who had suffered much when on earth. Life with us is just wonderful, although I do not know much about it yet, dear. I have no pain now. In this land of light and liberty pain does not exist. There is no pain now. One of the most comprehensive statements concerning us as etheric beings was once given in these words: you are just as much an etheric being now as you will ever be. You are just as much in the etheric world now as you will ever be. Only you do not appreciate the fact in consequence of your having a physical body attuned to physical surroundings. The etheric world is about and around you, and, at death, when you discard your physical body, you are in the etheric world without having to travel any distance to get there. You became immortal at your birth, and you are just as immortal now as you will ever be. Your physical body covers your etheric body, and you cannot appreciate your etheric body because it is made up of substance at a higher rate of vibration than your physical eye can see. When you die, you will appreciate the etheric body, and cease to appreciate your physical body. Your new body grows more and more refined as time passes, and you will rise to higher and higher planes of consciousness. You will see more, and you will see further. You will hear more, and you will hear more clearly. Any deformities you have will be corrected here. If you have lost a leg or arm, you will have it here, as it was only the physical arm or leg you lost. A momentary pause and then the speaker continued his fluent remarks. Your understanding will be enlarged, and you will be more conscious of the beauties of your surroundings than you are in the physical body. Your scope of usefulness will be extended beyond the limit of your present imagination. You will not have to trouble about money, about earning a livelihood, about eating or about clothes, or about a house to live in, as your mind will be in so much greater control of your surroundings that it will be able to mold those surroundings to meet your desires. There will be no more pain or sorrow or regret, no more grieving over separation after your loved ones from the earth have joined you. You will cease to regret the errors of the past through rectifying past mistakes. You will then enter on a life of eternal progress and everlasting blessedness. To find oneself strong and well, in a body similar to the body which had been left on earth, must be a great surprise to most new arrivals in the other world. This is what we were once told. I wish I could portray to you the startled look on some of the faces of those who have made the change and find they are standing, firmly grounded. We try to explain to them that they have passed from the earth life into the spirit world. As one young man, a young soldier, said to me, "But I am myself. It is amazing. Look, this is my hand, these are my legs, I am myself, I still have my body." Then it dawns upon them, and immediately their thought is of those left behind whom they love. It may be a mother, sister, brother, wife or sweetheart. How to get into touch with them and let them know that everything is all right, that they still live. Their chief plaint is, "Oh, that I could tell them." We explain that this may be possible later on and then things are much better. In answer to a question, we received the following reply: "Yes, my heart functions, all our organs function, but not just as in the human body. I do not understand very well myself, but I like to be near when some of the beautiful shining and advanced ones come to talk to us and teach us. Do you know, I just plunk down and listen as earnestly as you would do yourselves. As we are just mind, the wonderful substance which makes us conscious thinking individual beings, it consequently follows that memory does not die. We leave the physical body on earth to decay, but mind and the etheric body, being non-physical, do not die or decay. So we find on our arrival in the etheric world that our memory of earth life is still with us, and we can recall the past as we did on earth. Memory is our most wonderful possession, and the most potent argument in favor of our having a duplicate etheric body. Without memory we would be like dead things, and yet it is not physical in any sense. A man of 70 has not a single molecule present in his body which he had at the age of 20. They have all been renewed, and yet his memory of events, his capacity to re-picture past events right back to childhood, remains unimpaired, vivid, clear and distinct. Our memory goes with us when we die as it is part of our mind, and we find Aetherians coming back and reminding us of things and events which happened in their childhood on earth. It is not the food we eat which determines the shape and size of the physical body, as can be discovered by putting a foal or a calf or a lamb on a grass field. Though they eat the same food and drink the same water, yet the body of each develops differently in size and shape. Moreover, they are continually renewing their bodies. Throughout a lifetime the flesh and bones of humans and animals waste away completely, but we do not notice it because new flesh and bones take their place. Each physical cell is renewed, but how is this possible without a structure to support the physical cell in its decay and renewal? To accept the reality of the etheric duplicate body for all living creatures, which our etheric friends tell us each one has, answers this problem. Consequently, it seems logical to accept what they tell us, because it fits in with what takes place on earth. If something permanent did not remain, our bodies would have no foundation or uniformity. So nature has provided this etheric structure from our conception, and during its earth life it clothes itself, sometimes imperfectly, with physical substance like a garment, which it casts aside when, as a perfect body, It enters the etheric world, its real home.